Mark chapter 3. We're in Mark's gospel. Mark is the punchy gospel. He tells it, he tells Peter's stories of Jesus, and they're fairly to the point and concise, and there's a lot of stuff in there. There's some lovely detail in there as well, which could only have come from first-hand experience. And Mark has got this sense of excitement that he's here. He's here. Pay attention. Look at this. Look at this. Look at this. Look at that. He had this to say, that to say, and the other to say, and it's all important in Mark. It's all important, and that's the tone of this gospel that he's bringing to us. And so I'm going to read round about the first half of chapter 3 of Mark, and then we'll see what we can pick out of it. Because Jesus has got something to say about Sabbath. Okay? And this causes all sorts of debates around the church. So you're going to get my version of Sabbath this morning, and it'll be fairly blunt and to the point. All right? So here we go. Mark 3, another time. Another time, he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. And some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. And Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." It's always embarrassing when somebody does that to you, isn't it, really? "Stand up in front of everyone." And then Jesus asked them, which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? But they remained silent. He looked round at them in anger. And deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. And then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed. And when they heard all he was doing, many people came to him from Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, and the regions across the Jordan, around Tyre and Sidon. And because of the crowd, he told his disciples to have a small boat ready for him to keep the people from crowding him. For he had healed many, so that those with diseases were pushing forward to touch him. And whenever the evil spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You're the Son of God!" But he gave them strict orders not to tell who he was. Jesus went up on a mountainside and called to them those he wanted. And they came to him. And he appointed 12, designating them apostles, that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. These are the 12 he appointed: Simon, James, John, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, Thaddeus, Simon, and Judas, who betrayed him. He appointed 12 that they might be with him. With him. I want to talk to you a little bit this morning about being with Jesus. Being with Jesus. Jesus does things to people. Jesus does things to people. Being with Jesus had a profound effect on those around him. Oh, let's get that back. Right, we'll try again. There we go. Jesus had a profound effect on people around him. Some loved him. Some hated him. He caused a stir wherever he went, whatever he did, by whatever he said. And certainly you could never describe Jesus as being beige or neutral. He just wasn't, okay? He just wasn't. He was attracting far too much reaction for that. And Mark continues in chapter 3, where he left off in chapter 2. And right at the end of chapter 2, you'll see that Mark was on the theme of Sabbath, where Jesus very clearly referred to himself as Lord of the Sabbath and the Son of Man, two very clear messianic titles. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue. A man with a shriveled hand was there, and some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, and so they watched him closely, if he would heal on the Sabbath. Verses 1 to 6. Whichever way you come at this passage, it is a confrontation. It is a confrontation. Jesus' reputation as a healer, as a miracle worker, is growing. He's becoming a threat to the system in that sense. He's a problem for the religious leaders. He doesn't fit well with their system. And so a situation is concocted and set up on the Sabbath. The Jewish special seventh day of rest. And it's set up in the synagogue on the Sabbath. And notice how these Pharisees, these religious leaders, are using both this special day of worship dedicated to God, and they're using the sick man with his shriveled hands. They're using both of these things as tools. They're weaponizing them, actually, against Jesus. That's what they're doing here. And it's shocking. It's shocking how in the name of God something like this could be done. There's a check and challenge in here about how we use our Sunday services, actually, for our agendas instead of God's. You see, something has gone horribly wrong if the God-given principle, Genesis 1 and all that, the God-given principle of a rhythm of rest and renewal in the person of God has become instead dry, legalistic religion. A vehicle of indifference to this guy who's unwell. A vehicle of indifference that denies healing something good in favor of rules. Rules. Jesus is the opposite of indifference. Yeah? Jesus is he came down to be among us. There's no indifference there, is there? He left his glory behind. There's no indifference there. He humbled himself and became as a servant, as a human being. There is no indifference there. He came among us. He's the opposite of indifference. He's the representation of God who engages, who comes among, who is moved by, who is touched by, who wants to change. He's the opposite of indifference to the plight, the condition of men, women, children, and the world. He gets involved. He came to get involved. Being with Jesus is about changing. He wants to change. It's fascinating that the theme came up in the prayer meeting before we came in here. Jesus cares too much to leave us the same. Exactly the same line that came out in the prayer, actually. Cares too much to be indifferent to the plight of the world, and so to restore, he gets involved. Folks, not getting involved does not fit with Jesus' methodology. Yeah? It doesn't fit with following Jesus. We have to care and be with him where he is doing what he does. His work, his mission, his passion for justice and for peace and for grace and forgiveness and for wholeness and for lifting people up. Restoration. New life. Life in all its fullness, which Suzanne was talking about with the school. Lifting people up. Keeping the world at arm's length is not being salt and light, to borrow an image from Matthew's gospel. And so the biblical principle of Sabbath tells us that there is good reason to stop and worship around the word and the person of God, to build into our rhythm time to pause and to rest before God, to recalibrate. It's good for us to do that. That is biblical. And very quickly, the Christian church did so by adopting Sunday. They moved away from Sabbath to Sunday, a special day for Jesus. But we must be careful not to slavishly copy Jewish Sabbath into Christian Sunday. Jesus' regular conflicts with Sabbath observation all the way through the Gospels, with Sabbath tradition, is intentional and deliberate. And here's why. We have a tendency to get things confused and mixed up. Confrontation. I'm sorry, I'm always bad with my slides, aren't I? Here's why. We have a tendency to confuse the principle of Sabbath with the practice of Sabbath. The principle of Sabbath and the practice of Sabbath. And we can get them a little bit mixed up. The values of Sabbath with the vehicles, the values behind it and how we do it, what we do and what carries meaning. There are good principles of Sabbath. Principles of pausing, principles of stopping each week to worship God, principles of giving God space and permission and priority to speak, as we did at the beginning of this service, to speak into our lives, to press the reset button. There's a line that came to us at a Fresh Dreams conference. We need to press the reset button with God regularly, because we get stuff in that the virus is just getting into our system, and we need to reset. Stay connected. Stay alive. Stay central. God at the middle. Stay biblical. It's important. Principle of Sabbath. Time with God. Time with God. And then there are practices, however. The things we do. The vehicles for enabling renewal and connection. Folks, they are going to vary depending on who we are, where we are in the world, our culture, our context, where we're coming from. They are going to vary. They are going to vary. They're flexible. We don't worship now the same as the church did 2,000 years ago. We don't worship the same way the church in Syria does. We don't worship the same way the church in China does, but we all worship. And we have to shape stuff that's appropriate to give us fullness in our particular place, time, context, expression, point in history, circumstances that are going on around us. It's for the benefit of the people. Jesus does people over programs, values over vehicles. As he said in the previous chapter, chapter 2, verse 27 of Mark, Jesus says this: the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's supposed to be a blessing. Yeah? It's supposed to be a blessing. Wholesome, life-giving, flourishing stuff. The principle is sound, and there is good reason for Sunday church. But if our practices, the way we do church, no longer bring spiritual life, it's time to rethink how we do it. This is about bringing life to people, all people. New practices on old principles. The principle is sound. How we do it to keep it fresh and alive and fulfilling and energizing and a blessing. New practices on old principles. To take the vehicle of the gospel into new times, new places, new contexts, new cultures, new lives. Just as Jesus does when breaking with tradition. One preacher out there put it like this. He says, God sent Jesus to break some vehicles, to get back to some values, to break some programs, to get to some people. Beware doing things simply because we've always done it that way. Yeah? You know this. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up. Stand up in front of everyone. And then he asked the crowd, the congregation, the religious leaders, he said, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? And they remained silent with a question like that. It's disgraceful. I'm coming off the fence on this one. It's disgraceful. They should have been up in arms, shouldn't they? But fear and apathy and all sorts of stuff had set into that particular congregation, and they daren't do whatever. The condition was not right. And he looked around them. He looked around them in anger. In anger. Because of that lack of engagement with that important, you know, in anger. And deeply distressed. Jesus was distressed at his own people. I don't want that for us. At their stubborn hearts. We're not going to change because we've always done it like this. I'm sorry, I'm getting on my hobby horse. I'm on two soapboxes here, but I need you to hear what I'm saying. And this is the nub of it. Doing good, saving life versus doing evil and killing. And through his words and his actions, Jesus is saying, essentially, he's saying this. I came to do good and to save life. I came to do good and to save life. And therefore, in these words, the implication to the Pharisees, and they knew what he meant. The implication to them is this. What you're doing is doing evil and killing people. I'm doing good and saving lives, but I think what you're suggesting through your interpretation of Sabbath, through your practice of Sabbath, is doing the opposite. And what he's talking about is life, this fullness of life, the spiritual, the emotional, the physical, the complete fullness of life. Good, save life. Stretch out your hand, says Jesus. That's great, isn't it? Stretch out. There's a whole other sermon in there, which we haven't got time to do. Stretch out your hand. Save here means emotional, spiritual healing, and carries the sense of releasing things that bind up. It puts people back together. It heals. It changes situations. It makes a new way. It forgives. It restores. It reconnects with God. It transforms. It renews, actually. That's a much better word. It renews into that sense of flourishing that God intends for humanity from the beginning, because that's what Jesus is about. That's why he comes, that's why he engages, that's why he's still here now and interested. It's who he is, is what his name means. You will call him Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. That's what save means. It's that fullness of salvation. But dry legalistic religion is the opposite, and it makes Jesus angry. And the word for anger here, just so you don't get carried away for it, but it's that calculated, intentional, rational anger. It's not the hot-headed, mad stuff. So you do not have permission to get mad with people, okay? It's that intentional stuff. Dry religion drains and eventually smothers the breath out of life. Whether intentionally or not, this system, this interpretation of worship has lost its way. And the principle was there, but the practices, the rituals, the buildings, the programs have become restrictions and judgments that drain and sap life rather than energize and bring life. one of the wonderful liberties in our time is the variety of church expression. It really is fantastic that fresh expressions of church are springing up and that God is on the move. Much of church growth in the West is in new expressions of church, not so much this as focusing on Jesus and what he's doing and where he's doing it. Unity in the church is not uniformity. We get the words mixed up. Agreeing and believing together is unity. Expressing and being the same in exactly how we do everything, no, there's no need for that. There's no need for that. There is room for different expression in the kingdom of God to ensure that liberated faith, people can find life and flourish. We've got our preferences, we've got our opinions, that risk us behaving more like the Pharisees if we don't watch out. I'm right, do it like me, be like me. And for the tape, I am not right all the time, so do not do it like me and be like me all the time, okay? Be like Jesus. Be like Jesus. Stretch out your hand, and in that particular congregation on that Sabbath morning, many, many were offended because Jesus healed. How outrageous is that? How outrageous is that? He gave life. To conclude quickly, I'm sorry, we're running out of time. Jesus went up on a mountainside. He called to him those he wanted, and they came to him, and he appointed 12. That they might be with him, and that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. He appointed 12 that they might be with him. Before ministry, before being sent out to preach or teach or drive out or undertake whatever ministry or calling God gives, before is being with Jesus. Being with Jesus. It reminds us again of Jesus' principle of prayer right at the beginning of this gospel, of being with Father early in the morning before his day's ministry. It reminds us of the creation story with humankind made on the sixth day and on the seventh day resting, being with God, being with Jesus at the beginning. Start with him. Be with him. Press the pause button. Sabbath principle with Jesus. It starts there. Being with him gets us to do the things he does. Being with him helps us to act like him. Being with him is what disciples do. We're invited to live with Jesus and experience his presence and become like him. So often we've burdened ourselves with doing for Jesus, and it becomes about work, essentially. And then it degenerates into earning. And it's not meant to be. It's being with Jesus. And we get caught up in this frenetic activity. That is the world's way. Being busy is a form of worldliness. We know what we're trying to do as church. We're trying to build kingdom and do gospel stuff, a mission and all of that. But actually it starts by being with Jesus. If we're not fully with him and hearing what he says clearly, we won't be fully effective. It starts with Jesus. Often, less is more. And we go out and we do the scattered shotgun effect and we've reached him, you know, a million people and all the rest of it. And if we've just listened to him closely, he would have said, go and sit next door to Flossie, say this to them, and they'll believe. And it can be far more effective. I'm going off on them. Being with Jesus. Karl Martin, a Baptist preacher, says this, talking about himself, talking about us as Christians. People do not need my love. People do not need your love. Because my love and your love is flawed and limited and impure and has an agenda. What they need is Jesus' love in you, because you've been with him, because you've walked with him, because you're next to him and you are so close. I need, you need to be more like Jesus. I need to be with him more. Jesus in me, through me. The secret is not about what we do, but who we worship. Who we follow. Who we behold. Start living with Jesus. Because he's called you to be with him.